Our next speaker is who I call the appraisal magician. I came with this term. a couple of months ago, but he's the appraisal magician. He's also a developer himself. But there are certain things that he's really, really good at. And today he's actually going to share his thoughts on green developments and sustainable practices, plus a bit more. So please allow me to welcome our seasoned man of BEN, Jassim Rehmankazi. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Jack. Thank you very much. That was a nice welcome.
It's always good to have you. I think those who know you have seen you. We know what you can do with these fingers on a laptop. But yeah, I'll let you do your magic.
Thank you. Let me just share my screen and get going. Hey, Paul. Nice to see you here. I just want to ensure all of you can see my screen, and then we can go ahead from there. Can you see my screen? Full screen? Perfect. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Falake. Okay, so while Jack gave a very nice introduction about who I am and where I come from, being a numbers magician, and yes, I do love my numbers, I do love my spreadsheets, but today I'm not here to talk to you about numbers, I'm not here to talk to you about deal analysis, I'm not here to talk to you about any kind of thing as such. You just heard Cam speak about a deal analysis and how he's doing that, so you already have heard all of it. But each one of you is here because you are in the property industry in some capacity. Irrespective of what strategy you follow, you're still in the property industry. And the way property industry is moving is changing.
The 28 out of the 28 people that opted in.
Could I request?
If you say they're online technically. So probably like.
Yeah. So the way the whole property industry is being shifted is what I wanted to talk to you about. UK, because of its aim to achieve net zero by 2050, also is looking at various sectors, and housing is one of them. So they are changing the building regulations to meet the future net zero demand and how to be energy efficient. So keeping that background in mind, what I'm going to talk to you about is what the future looks like for UK and what changes the government are doing and how it impacts us as entrepreneurs in the property industry. Now, be it whether you're doing a flip, whether you're doing a HMO conversion, or whether you're a developer, this, whatever it is, will impact. If you're doing rent to rent, it might not immediately impact, but on a long-term basis, it will. Plus, at the same time, if you are a straightforward vanilla BTL landlord, part of it does impact you as well. So let's look at it. So what do the future home standards for? It's primarily to improve the energy efficiency of your homes and reduce your carbon footprint. So today I'm going to talk to you about three things. One, what is the aim of UK government by 2025? In the interim, what are they doing? And what changes are they bringing in for straightforward vanilla buy-to-lets? So ideally, by 2025, they want to reduce the carbon footprint by 75%. And in 2025, they want to start implementing. But that's a huge shift. It can't be brought in all of a sudden. It needs to happen as a gradual shift. And as part of the gradual shift over the last few years, they've arrived at changes to certain parts of the building regulation, which get implemented from June this year, that's next month. So all the new homes will be future-proofed with low carbon heating and high energy efficiency, primarily through the fabric of the property. How do you reduce the heat loss? at the same time not create ovens that we currently have. In the current day market, in the current day housing that what we have, what we live in summer, it tends to become overheated. Primary reason being the design perspective. We never thought about design, and now the government, by bringing in these initiatives, is making you think from a design perspective and start thinking at the concept stage. So, and with regards to the 2025, they will have the full tech spec ready by 2023. So you have 2 years to review the tech spec and go through it. They are hoping to make it a legislation by 24 and implementation by 25. So mid 25 is when the new standards will be required. Primarily, you will be moving away from the labor-intensive brick and block-based construction to more adaptive construction technologies. It could be something like a SIPS panel, or it could be something like a ICF, or it could be, in a way, timber frame construction. So there are various ways of looking at it, and then there are pros and cons for each technology. And most likely, my personal preference in terms of what I like the most is I like SIPS. That need not be necessary for everyone, and each one has its own pros and cons. So all the homes that comply with the future home standards will be future-proof. It'll be better for the environment because it is putting in less pollution into the air, atmosphere, and it'll be affordable for operating them, given how the energy prices have soared up in the last few months, moving away from the current gas-intensive boilers to efficient heating methods is becoming a must. And because it mitigates the risk of overheating, it allows comfortable stay within the house. And that comfort is improving your quality of living and thereby improving how your lifestyle. So it's not only about the environment, it is about yourself as well. And all of this is for us to have a better future. We have caused enough amount of damage. Can we start taking retrospective measures to minimize the damage and to make the future better? So like I said, in UK, its original target was to start in October. However, that has shifted from October to June this year. And so in June, all the new homes that start construction in June will be 30%, will have 30% lesser emissions compared to the new build houses that we currently have. By 2025, it would go to 75%. Ideally, there would be a gradual change, but there's no other interim measures at the moment. In 2021, they spoke about the three parts that are changing, two parts that are changing, and one new addition to the building regulations. So conservation of fuel and power, that's part L of the building regulations, they changed. They changed part F, ventilation, and they added part O, overheating. If you speak to any SAP assessor or EPC assessor in current day market, they don't even look at, all they want is the building fabric to be high on insulation. They are not really thinking what that additional insulation would do to the property within summer. So they're not assuming that risk of overheating at all. And while this is happening, by June, all these will come into effect, and then technical consultation of what to change, and then the regulation in 25, and then finally implementation of the future home standards. So in terms of government has announced to grow the heat pump market. Currently, all the heat pumps, it's very few people who are, so far it was by choice. It was not mandated. It was not regulated. But now, because of these changes in building regulations, people will start moving from gas-based boilers to heat pumps or to other methods of heating, such as infrared-based heating systems. then they will look at how, what's the feasibility to end connection of new build homes to the national gas grid. We as developers have stopped even bringing new gas connections to the development. We are doing a new build development in Rugby. We took a conscious call saying we are not going to have a gas connection there. We'll just have electricity and water and provide solar-based electricity generation as a means of complementing or in addition to the grid. And over a period, they are going to phase out installation of high carbon fossil fuel. Then there is a Green Homes Grant. Green Homes Grant will kind of help you with upgradation. Grant will not be available for new homes, but to upgrade the existing homes where, like, for example, say to do this upgrade, just to convert from boiler to heat pump is going to cost you about 10,000, just a number to indicate. If that 10,000 over a property value in London, it still makes sense because the property value will be over $500,000. So 10,000, when you look at it as a percentage, is hardly anything versus properties up north, where property value itself is about 50-60K, 10,000 compared to 50-60K is close to about 15 to 20% of the property value. That's significant. So how does the government will help based on the region to upgrade? They've still not announced. They did do announce in between, but that has been phased out. A new scheme is being worked on and they will be announcing that. And in the public sector, they are decarbonization scheme to support about 30,000 low carbon jobs. So from a private sector as well, there it is increased employment as well. So this is basically quite a technical detail. I will share this with Jack, the slide, so he can share it with you. And you can have it for reference, but it's primarily looking at where we were in 2012, where we are in 21 is basically 22, not 21 though. And then in the intermediate, what we could achieve versus what we can achieve, what we will be achieving in 2025. And if you want to be purely net zero, what is it that you need to achieve? So these are roughly the U values of the fabric. And they look at how this would need to get your reduce your heating requirement and heat loss. And from there, they are looking at what ventilation systems versus what other renewable energy dependency. So far, are there any questions? If you have any questions, if you can leave it on the chat box, I can just have a look at it.
We don't have any questions for now, Jassim. If they come up, I'll let you know.
Oh, perfect. Thanks, Falake. So speaking about fuel conservation of fuel and power, it's in the interim part L is the minimum standards. So they're changing the performance metrics of taking what is the target for primary energy requirements, and then what are the carbon dioxide emissions, how you change the fabric to meet your energy requirement for operations in the building. So they're reducing the U value from for elements in the new standards. So what would it mean to you? You need not, you as investors, entrepreneurs need not know the specifics, but you need to know that there is a change. You need to know that you need to be conscious about your carbon footprint on those buildings because there is a change in regulation. So when you're speaking to the contractor will know what changes to bring. And you're most important than your contractor, your architects and your whoever is creating a building regulation drawings for your proposed developments will know what these changes are and what kind of materials to specify. You as a building, you as a property entrepreneur, you need to know that there is changes coming in. And you're being conscious about those changes. So when does... Sorry,
we have a question in the box if you want to answer that now or...
Sure, I will do it.
Alan is asking, what is the best way to ensure you are not caught out? Is there a checklist or regarding the compliance?
There is no particular checklist. So basically, you'll have this document as a reference document, Alan, and you could definitely look at it from a perspective where what is the U value of your fabric, final fabric, and then you can ask those questions to your architect. So like in this particular slide that we are on, I'm talking about where this part L is responsible for, like what type of project. So if your project is one of these, then at that point in time, you can check with your architect and building regulations consultant whether you are meeting those regulations or not. There's no specific checklist created. Maybe over a period, I might create a checklist based on the number of projects that we do, and definitely we could look at it. Cheers, Alan. Guys, please don't mind. You can stop me because this is quite a bit technical. And if you want to ask more questions, please feel free to stop me and ask those questions. I don't mind because it's rather I would have an interactive session than bore you guys out with the technical detail. It is really important to know that this stuff exists, rather than making an error from oversight.
There's another question in the box from Alia. She's talking about existing...
About existing 100-plus-year-old stock of BTL, what are requirements to the building in order to get heat pump working effectively? Alia, if you can hold on to this question for a bit, because there are a few things that I am coming about in the next few slides, which will answer your question. My next few slides will definitely answer your question.
Jasim, I was wondering, is it for new developers and all, in terms of costs, is this more expensive than the traditional one? I know ongoing is cheaper in terms of affordability for the person living in the house, and it's better for the environment. But is that something that we need to then consider in our cost when we're calculating, because this is more expensive, or how does it work?
I'll give you an example, Falake. We are doing a new build site in Rugby, right? So because we are not putting a gas connection and we are not bringing in gas surveys, and we are not digging out to just connect to the main gas grid, we are saving close to about £4,500.
Is that on time?
No, not on time. Well, like just the cost of bringing in a new gas connection to your site.
All right.
So for that site, it would have costed us about close to £4,000 or £4,500. Just because we are not bringing in a gas connection, we are saving £4,500. That's number one. Number two, we are not putting a gas-based boiler and we are not putting radiators, which means we are saving another close to £2,000.
Right.
And plus labor. So say 3,000. So close to about £7,500 we have saved just by not putting gas connection and not putting a boiler. Instead, we went with infrared-based heating system, and that system costed us £6,000. So effectively, we have saved £1,500.
Okay, great. And I guess also with the marketability after, if you're selling or renting.
Because you're future-proofing the house in advance, you're thinking through and you're incorporating better heating solution, then you're providing better ventilation in the property. It helps you from a selling point of view as well.
Yep. So does that mean that you can then sell the properties as a higher cost? Because it's in more demand than the old stock?
You can only go to a certain level of high cost because each street in UK, in a way, as a hidden rule, have a ceiling price.
Right.
So, like, you cannot really get more than the ceiling price of that particular street for your property.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
One minute. So Paul, you asked a question. So does this also apply to returns? Paul, if you don't mind, if you can unmute yourself and explain the question a little more, please.
Hey, Jasim. Yeah, I was talking about it should be refurbs, actually.
Which one?
So the question is about refurbs, not returns. That was a typo.
Okay.
So do these new registration...
Like, for example, now if you see over here, if you see this particular slide that we are on, when does this apply? If there's a material change of use that takes place, for example, office to resi conversion, or if the existing fabric element becomes a thermal element, example, a cold roof in a is being converted to a loft for residential use space.
Okay.
Or if you're doing an extension. If you're doing a straightforward refurb, then this may not really be applicable. Okay. But if you're doing an extension, yes, it is definitely applicable. Okay.
I asked
or
another question.
Thermal element is being renovated. So like, for example, in the existing house, if you're going back to brick and you're kind of doing things like that, then yes, it'll be applicable.
Okay. So the other question I asked was, if a property doesn't have gas central heating and we simply put in infrared heating, how does that affect the EPC? Will it give us a favorable EPC rating now, or will they expect...
It will give you a See, at the moment, that is where I'm struggling with, because most of these SAP assessors do not understand the future standards. They are still about working with software that were created about 8 years ago.
Okay.
Not 10 years ago, sorry. 2012 is when the SAP software was created. Because they don't understand how to model it, rather than giving me a favorable EPC, they have downgraded it to D. So just on Friday, I've had a call with our SAP assessor to explain the whole thing to him, to explain how it is being beneficial. And then he comes up with, okay, I need to remodel and start using the new SAP software.
Okay. So it is possible that you need to kind of guide them initially to say, actually, you know, we've gone with infrared.
From June onwards, they will definitely get through it, because they would have moved from previous software to the new software any which way by regulation.
Okay.
Right now, the struggle is only for a month more, because they've still not started using the new software.
Fine. That's cool. Brilliant. Thank you, Jasim.
Yes. Alia's question I saw Paul's question. Then there's Rashmi Panchal's question. If one is doing loft conversion or extension, what does one need to do? Hold on to that question a minute. I will answer that question, Rashmi. Then Dhiman Mistry, what is U value? U value is basically the amount of energy heat loss per square meter of the property. In the most simplistic way I could define U value, that is what the U value is. Would these also apply to refurb instead of change of use? Like, if you see on this particular slide, it says if a thermal element is being renovated, for example, if an external wall of a property is being renovated or windows are being changed, then your thermal element is being changed. So in that case, it is applicable. How do you heat the home without gas, Magi? Good question. So like, without gas, you have what is called an air source heat pump, which basically traps in the heat from the air and passes it on to the into water. So water gets heated, and that water runs either through underfloor heating or into your radiators, and that passes on the heat. That's one. Second, you have what is called an MVHR system, mechanical ventilation and heat recovery. The MVHR system not only pulls out hot air from your bedrooms, but also captures the heat from the hot stagnant air and transfers that heat onto water. So that thereby heating the water and heating the whole system. This is through air source heat pump or ground source heat pump, similar concept. So basically what they do is that they do a reverse mechanism of a fridge. Rather than cooling, they just heat. I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible, not going to technical terms. So if it might sound stupid, so it's at the risk of sounding stupid, I'm still trying to keep it as simple as possible, please. That's one. Second is what is called as infrared based panels. You have the infrared panels are connected to your electric system, and they have thermostats for each zone. So these go behind the plasterboard into the ceiling between the joists, and they in turn heat up various elements in the room. So, and they act, the elements in turn act as radiators rather than heating up the air. So it's kind of, it doesn't heat up the air and make you feel suffocated, but it does keep you warm. I hope I've answered that question, Maji. Okay, that is, I've answered Paul's question. When doing a refurb, if there's no, yes, it would benefit the EPC, Paul. Like I've answered that question already. Heat pumps prove their efficiency and cost value. Efficiency, yes. Cost value, not fully. They are still in the process. That was answering Rashmi's question. Any recommendation for a good infrared heating system that meets EPC requirements? We are currently using a thing called InfraHeat. If you want, I can connect you to them. And we can go. We have kind of been happy with that at the moment. How do heat pumps infrared affect EPC? Ideally, they need to improve the energy efficiency, energy performance of the building. But SAP assessors still need to start using the upgraded software to be able to get the better EPC. So to answer Alia's question, yes, they are of good sources of heat, but at the same time, your fabric of your building also needs to have a certain U value. So the overall performance should be less than, the overall U value should be less than 0.2. If you look at the previous sheet over here, Alia, in this particular slide, they have said what the U value needs to be. So the U value needs to be around 0.15 for your roof, and needs to be 0.18 for your walls. So if this U value is met, then using a combination of air source heat pumps and IR will definitely work. Susan, to answer your questions, solar or electric, basically solar is the one that will convert light into electricity. So solar panels, all they do is they take in photon, convert them into electron. Electron is your electricity. So it converts it into a direct current, which then goes through an alternator to get you your alternative current, AC. So it basically DC to, it goes through an inverter to convert the DC into alternative current. So I'm not sure, is your question in terms of renewable energy versus fossil fuel based electricity? Yes, fossil fuel is being eliminated, and the country is now going towards more renewable sources of electricity. Yes, so basically, once you add the insulation, Alia, I'm seeing a question at 429. I'm not sure whether I've already answered or I'll repeat it. Wall and loft insulation, yes, basically. So when you add the insulation into your loft, you're reducing the heat loss and thereby you get your better U value. So if you add loft insulation is when you will be able to get U values of 0.15 or so. And same thing goes with wall. Maji, in terms of if you want to bring in a combi, ideally changing to a combi boiler now is not really a good thing, because over a period of next 8-10 years, they're going to phase out the gas. And there may not really be sufficient amount of gas. So you can look at, there are other heating methods. We could have a chat and see what is the best possible thing for that particular property, depending on what the property is. Yes, the combi boilers are still available. You do get low NOx combi boilers, but again, they're dependent on gas. And if gas as a source, it gets phased out over the next 10 years, whatever you're putting now will need to be replaced. So just be aware of that. Infrared cheaper than gas? Yes, it is cheaper than gas. I just explained getting a gas connection, putting a gas boiler, putting copper pipe throughout the property, connecting them to radiators. for a new build site in Rugby was costing us close to about 7.5 to 8K, whereas infrared is now coming to only about 6K. So it's giving us a saving of about £1,500. And this is a live case of a new build site in Rugby. Examples where we have used heat pumps or infrared. It's again, heat pumps are used in residential units. Infrared is also used in residential or commercial to resi units. It's just a matter of what budget and what is your end value as well. You could use, on resi itself, you use either a heat pump or infrared. Alia, I'm coming to this particular point of insulation versus ventilation when I talk about the new building, the new part O, which is overheating, the regulation that's coming into picture. So when I'm talking about that, I will be talking about insulation versus ventilation. Sure, Navi, if you can ping me later, my contact details are there on the end of this slide. If you can ping me later, I can get you the contact details for InfraHeat. The solar panel emit harmful radiation? I don't think so. I am not aware. If you have any background to that, Sean, please do share. I would love to know. I have not, because the way solar panels have been manufactured over the last, since about 2005 onwards, the way the solar panel is manufactured, I have looked at the whole value chain from silicon to ingots to wafers to cells to panels. That is crystalline silicon panel system that I'm talking about. The way it is manufactured, the way it is connected, I don't really see what form of radiation that it would emit. All I know is it basically captures the photon from the sunlight and converts them into electrons. Over a period, its efficiency reduces, but then that's bound to happen. So I don't really see any harmful radiation coming and being emitted from solar panels, Sean. Okay, I will have a look at this link. Thank you, Sean. Folake, if you don't mind, I'm not able to copy this link. Can you copy this link and keep it aside, please? The one from Sean. emfacademy.com/solar panel radiation.
I'll do that for you, that's fine.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean, I'll have a look at it. I definitely will have a look at it. I would like to know about it. Yes. So we have seen when this building regulation is, someone raised a hand. So we've looked at part L. So they're primarily looking at fabric first approach. What do I mean by fabric first? Like we just answered a few questions in terms of what kind of insulation and ensuring the fabric is dealt right. Only then when you have the right fabric, the amount of energy that is needed will change. So these are the reference values. Someone asked me for a checklist. You could basically use this as a checklist and then cross-refer this with regards to with your architect or your EPC consultant, and they'll be able to guide you better. Now, in terms of ventilation, so far what we were looking at ventilating was areas where there would be high amount of steam or areas where there would be high amount of vapor is where we were ventilating within the house. For example, an ensuite, a bathroom, or a kitchen. These were the only three areas in a house that we were thinking about from ventilation. Whereas now they have changing it to performance-based ventilation standards and assessing ventilation strategies from individual VOC-based compounds. So like, for example, even paint, it does have some amount of effect. And there are different types of paint, and paint has low VOC paints as well. And how do you minimize external pollutants coming into the internal thing? And how do you minimize noise? If you put a mechanical ventilation system, it would mean a lot of noise. How do you minimize the noise? What are the possible solutions, and what are the how do you simplify the design? Sorry. So they basically, they should be what the requirement is. Verbatim, it says there shall be adequate means of ventilation provided for people in the building. And when is it required? It is not required for rooms where people do not normally go to, or rooms that are used primarily only for storage, or which if it's a garage used solely in connection with a single dwelling. So for that, you don't really need to meet the ventilation requirement, but you need to. Apart from that, everywhere else it needs to. So it needs to extract water vapor and indoor air pollutants. It provides at least a minimum level of fresh air for the occupants, and it dilutes in indoor air pollutants and disperses water vapor when necessary. So like I said earlier, minimizing the external entry of external air pollutants, and as far as reasonably practical, it needs to have less level of noise, easy maintenance, and protection from cold drafts. So what they are saying is either you use extract ventilation, whole dwelling ventilation, or a combination of all of these, including purge ventilation. Purge ventilation is needed only when there's quite some amount of heavy fumes being created and you need to pull out extract ventilation suddenly for a particular time from that particular room. But in a normal dwelling, you don't really need, you might not need purge ventilation. What you can do is a combination of extra. Currently, we are just used to having extract ventilation because we use ventilation in a bathroom and we use ventilation in the kitchen. Instead of that, if you have a mechanical ventilation and heat recovery system, there is continuous amount of ventilation and it kind of helps you better. And what it does is when there is a continuous ventilation happening, it improves the level of moisture within the room and it reduces the pollutants. If you have ever noticed, if you are in a very heated room or a dry room where there's no fresh air, where there's continuous stale air, you do tend to get headaches. Whereas if it is being constantly ventilated, you'll be breathing in fresh air and you will not have those headaches. So when they look at ventilation, what they are suggesting is airtightness. So earlier what we would do, like what Alia said, they just wanted to insulate the roof. So they went and made it completely airtight, which is not really good. So now they are saying, let it not be 100% airtight. Let there be a 3 meter cube per hour per square meter of the building surface for it to ventilate. Sorry. And then there is new methods to check for airtightness. Earlier, if there was any gap or any hole, what the builder would normally do is he would just take out his foam gun and go seal it up. Now they do not want that. They want some amount of breathability in the fabric. It's not extensive breathability, but there needs to be some amount of breathability. So coming down to Alia's question in terms of the roof, it needs to change to incorporate, to reduce the airtightness. Any further questions at this stage? Okay, I'll move on to part O, which relates to overheating. So most of the current, ping in the chat. How does that balance with the passive house movement? So, Paul, with regards to passive house, the way the passive house concept is, all the energy that you need is generated by the building. That's why it's called passive. So passive house will obviously want 100% airtightness. While it is not leaving it at that, there is a mechanical ventilation that's ensuring there is air going through, ensuring there's fresh air, and ensuring the stale air is sucked out of the internal environment and pushed back out. So because of, by design, you're creating ventilation systems so that their 100% airtightness is okay. When you do not have these systems of mechanical ventilation and you don't have any other form of ventilation and you make it 100% airtight, you don't want to be living in a room full of stale air, do you? I hope I've answered that question. Yeah. No, I have not. Thank you. Is government proposing to move away from gas heating boiler? What are the sources of heat, heating for house, water, cooking? Many thanks. Yes, Ravinder, over a period, they will phase out gas-based boilers. It will primarily be electric-based heating solutions that they would favor. You do have water heaters, air source heat pumps, and MVHR systems can heat the water. So cooking will be based on induction cooking. It is a little too culturally, it's a culture shock for us to stop cooking with gas, especially Indians and Asians, for us to stop cooking with gas and start cooking with induction coil. But yes, we need to move there. If you have gas central heating, what will it cost to convert? We'll have to look at the building and the fabric, and then I cannot answer, Maji, I cannot answer that question straightforward. I hope it was that straightforward. Ideally, in gas central heating system, we would rather use the same system and just change the boiler from a gas-based boiler to a different source of heating water and connect it back to the same network, because otherwise you're doing a lot more work. So if you're going back to brick, life is much easier. If you're not going back to brick, life becomes very difficult, and you need to understand the fabric for me to be able to answer your question. Okay, Ritika, running cost of IR and other electric heating systems, is it cheaper than gas boilers? Definitely yes, because one, given how gas prices have increased versus IR and the infrared particularly, has an efficiency of close to about 85%, 85 to 87%. So what it means is the amount of electricity it consumes to the heat energy it provides, there's only a loss of about 15% compared to other electric-based heating systems. So eventually it does need less amount of electricity and thereby reducing your cost. In comparison to IR, other electric heating systems are quite expensive. That's why we don't prefer other heating systems. We prefer IR. Paul, basically MVHR and air source heat pumps, I know this is quite confusing, but it is two different elements and they work together. You need a collective MVHR and air source heat pumps. It is not one or the other. What is MVHR? MVHR stands for mechanical ventilation and heat recovery. Okay, sorry, just give me 1 minute. If someone is doing major refurbishment of a house, is it advisable to get rid of gas central heating and install heat pump? Ideally, yes. That's what I would do. But that's not necessarily, just because I would do does not mean everyone needs to do. Ideally, you can cap off the gas and find alternative ways of doing it right now, because you wouldn't want to incur additional costs over a period. Heat pump is a one-time cost and you just have your electricity payment to make for it, for consumption. That's it. So basically, with regards to overheating, what they are saying is, rather than looking, sorry, I look like there's one more question. Welcome, Ravinder. Going back to overheating, what they are telling is, not only in terms of by putting ventilation, also look at the design. So for example, what is the orientation of the building? How does that impact? Can you provide sunshade, or is there additional heating heat protectors on the external side that prevent summer heat coming into the property? Like, is there natural methods of shading, for example, a tree, a large tree, or a building providing shade onto this thing? And what is the occupancy of this building going to be? What are the materials being used? And so on. So based on that, they are saying, look at overheating from that perspective. So how do you limit your solar gain? Can you put shading devices? Can you put glazing devices from a building thing? Can you put sunshades? Can you use the shade of the adjacent buildings? And how do you remove excess heat from the indoor environment? Like, I am a big fan of mechanical ventilation system, but at the same time, you don't need mechanical ventilation always. You can just, by keeping windows open for some time, you have clean, fresh air coming in. Wow. So this is basically a heat, this is how it would work. It would take in fresh air, and it will extract, give out fresh air to warm air to all living areas, extract the stale warm air from other living areas, and push it out. So overheating, what is the mitigation? So just a requirement verbatim of the thing. Falake, how much time do I have?
We've got 7 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
6 minutes, yeah.
Okay. Overheating, so I'll just quickly change. Now, coming down to people who are asking me about existing properties to be changed. So like I said, currently for any property to be in a habitable condition, the minimum EPC rating is E, whereas by 2025, you need to change it to C. If you look at the EPC certificate, it will tell you what measures you could incorporate to improve the energy efficiency. If by chance there is a tenant already living in the property, you have time until 2028 to upgrade it to C.
And Jasim, can I ask you something? If a tenant is in the property, it's actually a landlord job to work on increasing the EPC rating. It's not the tenant's job, is it?
No, it is not the tenant, it's the landlord. So what the government is doing is, if you have an existing tenant living in the property, rather than limiting them to convert to improve the energy efficiency straightforward, they've given them additional 3 years to change the EPC. Basically, before that tenant vacates and then before next tenant comes in, he or she should have improved the energy efficiency from E to C.
Okay, and what are the steps that someone needs to take to be able to go from, let's say, E to a C?
So if you look at your the energy efficiency of any particular house in UK, Jack, it'll tell what its current energy efficiency is. And then it'll say what possible steps that you could do and how much that will improve by and how much that will cost. So if I don't have time, otherwise I would have just pulled out a random EPC of any property in UK. And if you look at the bottom of the EPC, it'll tell you what you can do and how it would change. The fourth bullet over here basically summarizes all of it. It's roof insulation, wall insulation, floor insulation, double glazing or triple glazing. Triple glazing is a bit too much. Changing all electrical fittings to LED. And then you improving your heating mechanism of your property. And adding solar PV panels. I'm still yet to read the link shared by Sean. So I will have a look at what that says. But otherwise, at the moment, I'm still a big fan of solar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The principles to drive sustainability. Design. I'll just take a minute or two, and then I'll wrap up after this slide. So by design, can you reduce, you don't want your very hot summer sun coming in. However, you want in the winter, you want the sunlight coming in because that's lower. You just get that to heat up the space. You distribute the heat, you ventilate, you create a thermal bridge-free design. So your the heat loss you're minimizing. And then you provide adequate amount of insulation. You provide air tightness to a certain extent where in passive house, it's 100%, but in normal houses where you're not adding all the elements of sustainability, you do allow certain breathability. These are the basic principles to drive sustainability within a house. So typical difference between typical and sustainable house, sustainable home, minimum energy use, more comfort, lower risk of overheating, better quality of life. Because it's continuously ventilated, there's reduced risk of mold, lasting quality and performance. It's future-proofed and it has you've built in long-term value into the property. I don't have to say we particularly chose a not-so-good-looking house. And not that this is how all houses look like, but they do have a lower build cost compared to sustainable, but they have a high energy usage and cost, stuffy, stagnant indoor air, high risk of overheating, and medium to high maintenance. So the question to you is it a good time to think and invest green? We do think yes. And that's why we have already started ensuring all our developments have an element of sustainability in them, at least an element, if not more. So be it refurbs, be it new builds, we are looking to ensure there is an element of sustainability in those developments. If you have any questions, feel free to reach us. These are our contact details. This is my business partner, Lydio, and this is me. So if you can take a screenshot of this, feel free to reach us and we can help you or guide you in what best way possible.
Just it might be a good idea if you write your mobile number in the chat box.
I will do that.
It makes it a lot more easier. Guys, I think you might have seen my introduction with Jasim. He's just very, very real, very down to earth. And he just shares some amazing, amazing, you know, things that you can potentially do with your refurbs, with your developments. And, you know, I mean, some of the internal members will tell you that he is an appraisal magician. He's also a developer himself, but he also does project management. So reach out to him if that's something that you look